This is Audible.
One day, young Sherlock Holmes was in his pajamas eating pies in his mother's pantry in the relatively modest mansion she shared with her beloved husband, Oswald Holmes. His mother, who was called Camilla, sat her young son down and said,
"Your lovely granny, Shirley Holmes, has left you two wonderful things in her will. And as you start Prestbury Prep tomorrow, your dearest papa thought it best you should have them now.
Exciting.
You see, Sherlock, we feel they may come in very handy for you in the future. At Prestbury Prep, you will start in the elementary class for 11-year-olds, where your teacher will be Mr. Hopkins. He went to school with your father. Oh, and your headmaster, Mr. Pickles, is reputed to be great fun. That's when he's around. He's evidently rather elusive."
At this point, she handed over a pipe made from an old cuttle bone.
"When you blow the pipe, darling boy, bubbles will come out, and within them you will see pictures of your dearest grandmama, Shirley Holmes. The magnifying glass has even more significance, and you will find out soon why, dear boy.
I can't wait.
So use it wisely."
"I will, Mummykins."
"The servants will pick you up and take you to Prestbury Prep School tomorrow.
Jolly dee.
Your satchel is packed and your bags ready to go.
Ace.
Nanny McFarland and your manservant, Jonathan Henchworthy, will be taking you to school on your favourite horse and carriage.
Yippee.
Say goodbye to your darling doggy, Patch, and go to bed."
"Goodbye, Patch, old bean."
The next morning, Sherlock hugged his mother before boarding his carriage, which was led by his favourite stallion, Miss Figgypud.
"You'll get used to your new school,"
said Nanny McFarland as she sat in the carriage with a slightly emotional Sherlock to her side.
"He's right,"
said Jonathan Hedgeworthy as he started steering the horse towards Prestbury Prep in Middle England.
"Hold tight, it's a good 2 hours this journey. Giddy up, girl, way!"
"I'm going to miss my parents very much,"
said Sherlock.
"I know Daddy's very often away anyway, in Tangier dealing with gold and whatever it is he does, but I'm going to miss this old place."
"Don't worry, there's always the school holidays, you know,"
said Nanny McFarland. As they arrived in Prestbury, there was yet another tearful moment for poor Sherlock. For when they pulled up at the school gates, he had to say farewell to his favourite stallion, Figgypud.
"I'll always love you, Figgypuddy. Goodbye."
Oh, and also, he was a little bit tearful about his servants too, Nanny McFarland and that chap, you know, Jonathan Henchworthy.
"Goodbye, manservant and Nanny."
"Goodbye, Sherlock."
"Goodbye and good luck."
"Thank you,"
said Sherlock. And then he turned his back on his manservant and his nanny and walked through the school gates of Prestbury Prep. The next morning, Sherlock began his first class. He was not at all impressed with his teacher, Mr. Hopkins, whose knowledge of algebra was mediocre to say the least. Unfortunately, the young Holmes did himself no favours by pointing out his teacher's foibles. Eventually, Sherlock was asked to stay behind for a one-to-one chat with Mr. Hopkins.
"What is this all about?"
asked Sherlock Holmes with a mischievous look on his face.
"Listen and listen well," said Mr. Hopkins. "I'm aware that you're a clever lad, but I'd appreciate it if you did not undermine me. It will only serve to get me into trouble with the headmaster, Mr. Pickles. you've got something to tell me, then tell me in private. And I'm sure that way we will get on famously. Do you understand?
All right, very well, said Sherlock. I just don't suffer fools gladly, that's all. But I'll respect your wishes. And if you need any refresher courses on any subject whatsoever, don't hesitate to ask me. I'm very clever, you know.
I'll bear that in mind, Holmes. Now, just go! And remember, this conversation was completely confidential, okay?
Okay. Point taken. I'll bear that in mind,
said Sherlock Holmes as he left the classroom with a wry smile upon his face.
As he closed the classroom door, he skipped down the corridor at quite a pace, bumping into Mr. Pickles, the headmaster.
Oh, stop running in the corridor, Holmes. Save your athletic prowess for sports day. You nearly knocked me flying, young man.
Oh, sorry, sir, my mistake, said Holmes. And as for sports day, I will think of something rather special. Just you wait and see.
Good lad, that's what I like to hear. I'm never an enthusiastic student. Now, on your way, Holmes.
Jolly good, sir,
said Holmes as he sauntered down the corridor at a leisurely pace.
Young Sherlock was very clever and did go along with Mr. Hopkins' wishes to some extent,
but did confide in a young nerd called Billy Watson, who incidentally was the son of the famous Basil Watson,
who invented the gaslight.
Although a little nerdy, Watson was a very clever young chap, and Holmes was the first to spot his gift for his intricate work in both the biology lab and, of course, science, especially his ability to create various medicinal compounds. Now, this gift that Watson had came in very handy for a scheme that Sherlock had dreamt up in his highly active mind. Sherlock had noticed that a young boy in the class called Sheridan Coldstream was being bullied by four lads simply because he had white pimples on his face. Quite a normal thing for a man of his age, but very, very upsetting to be constantly bullied by these chappies whose names, incidentally, were Jimmy Wilbersmith,
all right, mate,
Tommy Bottomley,
hello,
Johnny Archer,
oi,
and Tarquin Blackbeard, whose great-grandfather was a notorious pirate.
Oi, oi, Captain.
To make sure he was on track, Sherlock decided to consult his grandmother through the magnifying glass that was given to him by his mother in the pantry. He took it to a little alcove in the library, and to his amazement, his grandmother's face appeared within the lens.
Hello, Sherlock. You're looking well. How are you?
I'm fine, Granny. Great to see you. Wonderful, in fact. I need some advice, that's all.
Yeah, about bullying, isn't it? Yeah, I planted the idea in your head. It's about those four nasty lads, isn't it? Horrible people.
Yes, it is, actually. It's exactly what it's about. What do you think I should do about it?
How? You should follow your instincts and use your friend Watson. He's really great, that bloke. Go with him, he's marvellous. Yeah, you know what you're doing. Good luck, son. Stop this bully. I can't stand bullies.
And on that note, Granny disappeared. The next day, Sherlock approached Watson in the library whilst blowing on his cuttlebone bubble pipe.
Watson, I want you to solve this problem. You're a genius when it comes to medicinal compounds, so let's play a trick on these bully boys. What are your suggestions, dear chap?
Simple pimple poo, said Watson. We break into the science lab, and I shall invent a compound that will turn these bullies into ridiculous-looking creatures for at least 3 days. And for their heads to momentarily grow bigger. I think I know how to make their faces go green. I need the elixir to be meticulously put together using simple herbs and a chemical substance called lartoxacaine terothathine.
I knew that, said Sherlock. I looked in my magic magnifying glass and the ghost of my dear grandmama assured me of this. But you can administer a gold star, for I now know that we are a team.
If you say so,
said a relatively amiable Watson.
But I have another idea,
added Sherlock.
You must make a compound that makes the poor, bullied chap look totally gorgeous, almost Adonis-like.
Oh, okay.
Sheridan must look amazing, and they must look absolutely awful. Do you think you can pull this off?
Yes, of course, said Watson. It's elementary, dear Holmes.
Sorry, that's supposed to be my catchphrase. I say elementary, dear Watson, in future, okay? Please go by my simple rules, and we'll get on just fine. Do you understand?
Yes, I suppose so. How do you come to this conclusion?
Elementary, dear Watson.
The very next day, they broke into the lab, and the concoctions were made to perfection.
But suddenly, Mr. Hopkins walked in. They'd been caught red-handed in the lab. He was with his assistant and trainee teacher, Greta Jenkins. Strangely, she was dressed in Morris dancing attire.
I told you they were up to no good, she said.
I know. What are you doing? According to my assistant teacher here and trainee Greta, you have been making some kind of compound.
I told you they were up to no good.
You're quite right, Greta. I mean, Miss Jenkins. They are up to no good. What are you up to, Holmes?
Nothing you need to worry about, sir. It's for the record of a school. That's all you need to know.
All right, Holmes. We'll turn a blind eye this time. But Miss Jenkins here has given me an idea of what you're up to. She overheard a conversation. But come on, Miss Jenkins. Let's get back to the staff room and discuss this idea of yours of putting Morris dancing on the school curriculum.
Okay, sir. As long as you're still going to give me top marks, I'd try so hard for you.
And at that point, Hopkins and Jenkins left the lab to go and discuss the Morris dancing project. The bully boys had the compound put in their porridge very subtly by a young Holmes, who was pretending to be really chatty and talking of football and boys' own type things.
Football. I'm talking of football.
Meanwhile, Watson put the compound that was to make Sheridan look marvellous in his Weetabix. He managed to do it as Sheridan was hanging his head in shame as the bully boys laughed with them with all their might at his cluster of white pimples. Oh, how things had changed by the end of breakfast. The four bully boys' heads had grown tenfold and become bright green. This caused massive amounts of laughter amid the whole school, including, disgracefully, some of the teachers. Meanwhile, Sheridan morphed into the best-looking man ever to be seen at Presby Prep.
He looks nice, a bit like that Adonis,
said a young porridge-forward-slash-Weetabix server.
That was fantastic. How did we achieve this, Sherlock?
Elementary, dear Watson. Elementary.
And in days to come, their humongously massive green faces, by design, were due to go back to normal, whilst Sheridan would remain the gorgeous man he was always meant to be. Sheridan approached Sherlock and Watson in the corridor and said,
I've got a feeling it was you that turned me into the person I am, and I can't thank you enough.
Absolute nonsense, said Sherlock. We had nothing to do with it, and we have school tomorrow, so let us retire to our beds. Good night, Sheridan. Sleep well, said Sherlock.
Yes, have a lovely night, and congratulations on looking fantastic.
Meanwhile, in their dormitory, the four bully boys were furious, trying to wash their green faces and wondering why their heads were so huge. It all goes to show, bullying never pays off in the long run. Sherlock did manage to sneak out of the dormitory that night and have a private word with his grandmother in a little cubbyhole at the end of the corridor.
Just before Sherlock got out his magnifying glass, he received a tap on the shoulder. When he looked round, standing there in full Morris dancing attire, was his teacher, Mr. Hopkins, and assistant teacher and trainee, Greta Jenkins, also in full Morris dancing garb.
You don't need to tell us, but we both suspect that Sheridan Coldstream turning from awkward-looking youth into an extremely handsome, pimple-free chap has something to do with yourself and Watson, said Hopkins.
That's right, said Greta. I overheard some of your conversations, but don't worry. We both admire the fact that you have sorted the bullying situation out here at the school. But don't worry. We won't be telling the headmaster, Mr. Pickles, that you've been making medicinal compounds in lab. As for the bully boys concerned, it served them right. And we know for a fact their condition's not permanent.
No offence, said Sherlock, but I haven't the slightest idea what you're referring to. Now, if you don't mind, we have very important business to attend to.
Very well, said Mr. Hopkins, but just to let you know, I may be seeing you during the school holidays, for Miss Jenkins here and I are to be married. We've fallen in love.
That's right,
said Miss Jenkins.
Your teacher here has taken a great interest in my devotion to Morris dancing. And in turn, I've learnt a lot about his passion for yodeling. Yodel-a-hee-hoo!
I'm going to do one now as well. Yodel-a-hee-hoo!
Then Hopkins made another announcement.
We are to be married in a small Cotswoldian village called Diddlesburg. A lovely little church. Oh, yes. I would love it if both you, your father and mother, would attend. It would be marvellous, you know. Oh, and another thing. It's going to be a themed wedding, isn't it, my dear?
Oh, yes. It's going to be yodeling and Morris dancing combined. Yodel-a-hee-hoo!
Also, our honeymoon is going to be yodeling and Morris dancing themed on the Orient Express.
Oh, that sounds quite absurd, actually, if you don't mind me saying so, sir,
said Holmes.
Yes, it's going to be absurder on the Orient Express.
Excellent attentive humour and all fascinating stuff, said Holmes,
as the two yodeling lovebirds finally left Sherlock in peace.
Sherlock got out his magnifying glass, and Shirley Holmes appeared. She winked at Sherlock, who was just having a blow on his fantastic bubble wipe.
You've done well, son. You helped in my bullying campaign. You're
father, my son, is sure to be proud. Keep up the good work. Good night, and God bless.
Sherlock blew on his bubble pipe and felt great pride in the work that he had achieved with the help of his wonderful grandmother, Shirley Holmes. During the school holidays, Holmes and Watson were reunited with their teacher and his apprentice, Greta Jenkins, who were married in the small church in the Cotswolds they had spoken of before. Also attending the wonderful Morris dancing and yodeling-themed wedding was none other than Hopkins' old school friend,
hello,
Oswald Holmes.
Lovely to see
Sherlock's father. His wife, Camilla, Patch the dog, Nanny McFarland, manservant Jonathan Henchworthy were also present at this marvellous event. Providing the music was none other than Holmes and Watson, who were playing fiddle and accordion. As the happily married couple left the next morning on horse and cart in order to catch the Orient Express for their exceptionally original honeymoon, friends and well-wishers cheered them all on, throwing in a few yodels for good measure. Well, once Sherlock Holmes and Billy Watson returned to school, rest assured, they had a very exciting time ahead. Mr. Pickles, the headmaster of Presbury Prep, announced that Sports Day was to be on August the 17th, which incidentally was in 6 days' time. Suddenly, an enthusiastic Sherlock Holmes put his hand up and said,
"My dear friend Watson and I have created a brand new game called Crazy Golf. And I really must recommend that you include this Crazy Golf game that we've invented on this special day."
"Well, I must say, I'm rather intrigued at this Crazy Golf thing that you've invented. Explain more, Holmes. It's important that I know why this crazy golf thing that you're talking about is so essential to our day of sport here at Presbury Prep."
"My idea is quite simple. You will gain great credibility for embracing a new sport. Ta-da!"
said Holmes.
"He's right. It's simple pimple poo,"
shouted out a nerdy Watson, adding,
"If the press think you're being progressive, it will look very good for both the school and you personally. Sherlock and I have invented the game to be both simple and fun. Meh, meh."
"I'm liking this. If it's good, as a headmaster, I might be perceived as a progressive type. Yes, I'm liking it lots. Tell me more."
"Okay," said Watson. "I've invented a ball made from elastic bands. I bolted it together with my very, very bright mind."
"Excuse me. My dear friend has done something rather good here, but it was basically my idea. And I'm sure that lots of massive articles can come out in all the major newspapers, and you will be deemed wonderful, sir,"
said a rather manipulative but convincing Sherlock Holmes. He then went on to explain the concept of crazy golf.
"This is how it works. Everybody stands in a line, and when they get to the post, they put on a winkle picker shoe. At the end of the field, there is a hole, just like the one they have in golf, you see."
"Okay, so far so good. Carry on."
Okay. So, the first person wearing the Winklepicker shoe to kick the elasticated ball into the hole becomes the champion. The champion of crazy golf. Aha!
I'm liking this a lot, said the headmaster. We will put it on as the main event, just after the traditional egg and spoon competition. Yes, I like this idea of being deemed progressive, I must say. So, Holmes, Watson, come to the headmaster's office at 3 p.m. and we'll discuss all the press details. Oh, I'm excited at this whole thing. I'm going to be deemed progressive.
I'd just like to chip in, said Mr. Hopkins. I'd like to take some credit for my wonderful student here. It's me that has given them the confidence to be the innovative in this way. Yes, I am also very proud.
Yes. My husband's been very, very supportive to Holmes and his cohort, Watson,
said the recently renamed Greta Hopkins.
Oh, yes, if I say so myself, I've been the most marvellous mentor.
There's no need to boast, Mr. Hopkins. We can all take credit if we get this right now. It's the end of assembly, so we must all sing our song for the day. Now, it was going to be Onward Christian Soldiers, but today we will change the lyrics to Onward Crazy Golfers. Here we go. Onward Crazy Golfers, Winkle Pickers and all. Heading off to sports day with an elastic ball. All together now.
Onward Crazy Golfers, Winkle Pickers and all. Heading off to sports day with an elastic ball.
As sports day arrived, the egg and spoon race was brushed over, in fact. No one paid any interest in it whatsoever. Well, apart from the winner, of course, who was a little pipsqueak called Alberto Confecarac, who came from a remote island just shy of the kingdom of Shah, which, as I'm sure you know, was situated in a far-flung land. He was a nice enough lad, but soon realised that the egg and spoon trophy he received, which, incidentally, was an egg and a spoon, was hardly the highlight of the day.
I am very disappointed.
The parents and lots of prestigious people all turned up to see this crazy golf winkle-picking hybrid that, according to the sports column in the Sunday Times, could become this nation's saving grace. As all the children from Prestbury Prep lined up to play crazy golf, there was an element of tension amongst the crowd, which included Sherlock's highly supportive, if not slightly elusive, mother, Camilla. Sadly, due to commitments in Saudi Arabia, Sherlock's father, Oswald, could not make it to the event.
It's a shame he couldn't make it, but never mind, life goes on. Ha-ha,
said Sherlock.
I wouldn't worry too much, replied Watson. My parents haven't turned up at all. I got a letter from them saying that the idea was naff and that I should be studying medicine, mathematics and advanced algebra.
Okay. It's not a competition. Now let's concentrate on the game. It's very important this day is successful. You understand that, don't you, Watson?
Oh, yes, it's elementary. I mean simple pimple poo.
You nearly stole my catchphrase again there. Be very careful. I'm quite touchy about that one.
All right. Keep your hair on. The game is about to start. Look, they're just about to blow the whistle.
The whistle blew, and for hours and hours, many attempted to get a hole in one, which actually, in truth, started to become quite laborious. until suddenly a nice young lad called Ginger Harris put on the winkle picker, kicked the ball. Yes. In fact, he did a toe poker, sending the ball high up into the sky.
Here we go.
As it descended, it landed perfectly in the hole.
Oh, look, he's got a hole in one. He's a winner,
shouted Watson as the crowd cheered with all their might. Naturally, Ginger was over the moon to receive a gold cup. As he did his lap of honour around the school grounds, the press feverishly covered the story, making him an overnight sensation. For the next week, Crazy Golf was all over the national press. Presbury Prep was applauded by one and all for creating this marvellous new sport. Also, shoe shops started to become prosperous, selling their own designer winkle pickers. Some coming free with an elastic ball.
And the Crazy Golfers, winkle pickers and all, heading up to Spartan with an elastic ball.
And this turned out to be a resounding success.
Sadly, a week or so later, Ginger's heart was broken, for he went into his dormitory to find that his gold cup had been stolen. The prize he had received for his achievement, his memory of becoming the first ever Crazy Golf champion in the world.
My golden cup is stolen, and my heart is now broken forever and a day.
Cried Ginger. Sherlock found out about this terrible theft and really felt sorry for poor Ginger Harris. After all, his achievement was phenomenal, and now he was reduced to tears. Young Holmes popped into a private little alcove he regularly used in the school library. Whilst blowing on his cuttlebone bubble pipe, he whipped out his magnifying glass. And as regular as clockwork, his ghostly granny appeared.
Hello, Sherlock, son. I know what you're going to ask me. It's all about the theft of Ginger's trophy for winning Crazy Golf. I saw the game myself. Ooh, that toe poker was wonderful.
Yes, I know, Granny, it was a wonderful moment, I agree. But, you see, Ginger has had his trophy stolen, and it's put a bit of a dampener on the whole thing, you know.
Of course I know. I'm Shirley Holmes. Oh, silly. Look, I'll tell you what's happened, right? The person who has stolen the trophy is none other than Alberto Confacarac. Confront the little pipsqueak by all means. But please, Sherlock, be gentle with him. He did not get the accolade he was hoping for when he won the Egg and Spoon race. He'd been practicing for that competition all year round. Poor little lad. All you need to do is confront him, tell him off, and make sure the trophy gets back to the rightful owner. No one else need know about this. He'll never do it again. He's a pipsqueak. He's no thief. It was a one-off. Oh, I feel for him. He's got a lovely smile.
And as usual, just when he least expected it, his ghostly granny disappeared without a buy or leave.
Sherlock only told one person about Alberto's nasty little secret, his good friend, Watson. Together, they confronted Alberto about his poor behavior.
It was wrong what I done, said Alberta, but I was very bitter because nobody took any interest in my winning of the egg and spoon race. I will apologize profusely to Ginger. I admire his sportsmanship very much. It was wrong, what I done.
I know, you're beginning to repeat yourself. I suggest we just crack on and do the old apology, old chap. Okay?
Okay. I won't ever say it was wrong what I done again, okay? Okay, I was right what I did not do.
Oh, now you're just talking gibberish. Just get the trophy. You've got an appointment with Ginger in his dormitory in 10 minutes.
Said Watson, sounding slightly more aggressive than usual.
Be gentle with him, Watson. Trust me, it was a one-off incident.
In a private meeting, Ginger accepted Alberto's apology.
Apology accepted 100%. It was wrong.
And was so proud to have the gold cup back in his possession. The Fabulous Four all went out onto the field and had a game of crazy golf in which Alberto got a hole-in-one. Later on that evening, in the dormitory, Watson posed a question to Sherlock.
Come on, tell me how you solved the theft of the gold cup.
Elementary, dear Watson. Elementary. Or as you would say, simple, pimple, poo. And on another note, I think that both you and I, Watson, both know what everybody will be singing just before Sports Day, this time next year.
And the crazy golfers, Winkle Pinkers and all, heading up to Sports Day with an elastic ball.
One day, Sherlock Holmes was practicing crazy golf on the school grounds with his friend Watson and the school matron, Harriet Scattybottom. Harriet was a massive fan of crazy golf and had indeed become the woman's champion of Middle England, much to the pride of her husband, Jimbo Scattybottom, who happened to be the school's caretaker and groundskeeper. To say the least, Jimbo was an eccentric chap, and although, in fact, did very little work around the school, was a popular character who was very famous for his magnificent cartwheels, which he did for no apparent reason. But I'll tell you one thing, it made everybody very happy and kept the spirits up in the school, and that can't be a bad thing, let's face it. As Jimbo cartwheeled all over the grounds of the school, his loving wife practiced her crazy golf techniques with Holmes and Watson. Despite Harriet being on form, she suddenly stopped and broke down in tears.
It's my pet newt. It's vanished. It's vanished into thin air. I haven't the heart to tell my wonderful husband, for he adores that newt even more. And he adores me. We keep him in a massive aquarium in the basement of our small but lovely tumble-down cottage. Ooh, ooh, ooh. He is 4 foot long and is from a remote village in Gambia. He was gifted to us by a tribe leader called Gonzo Papapot. We met him randomly in the street when he was craving an English dish called fish and chips. He loved the way I cooked them, and so he sent us the giant newt by way of thanking myself and my husband for his fish and chip experience. Oh, dear, dear, dear. When my husband finds out about the missing giant newt, He will be so heartbroken, he won't be able to do cartwheels anymore and entertain the children. Oh, dear. Oh.
A triple somersault this time.
Leave it with me, said Holmes. I will solve this crime and get back to you on the news within the next 24 hours, okay?
Oh, really? Are you sure you can achieve this, young Sherlock?
Asked the lovely matron.
Of course, I'm Sherlock Holmes. I solve all crimes. I assure you, your newt will be returned, okay? So, you carry on practicing crazy golf with Watson, and I will go and consult a friend of mine in a private alcove in the school library. That's all you need to know. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'll give it my best shot, but my heart's not really in it.
When Holmes got to his little alcove in the school library, he got out his magnifying glass and consulted his spirit granny, Shirley Holmes.
The newt has been stolen by a collector of rare animals,
said the ghostly granny.
I'm sorry to inform you that the evil person concerned is that woman, Mavis Speckles, your history teacher. She broke into Matron's home a couple of nights ago with some cat burglary. Oh, awful woman. Except this time, instead of stealing cats, they stole the newt. So now technically they're not only cat burglars, but they're newt burglars. Oh!
Speckles was confronted by Holmes and was made to return the newt to its rightful aquarium before Jimbo found out. Needless to say, the matron was very grateful indeed.
Oh, thank you so much, Sherlock. You're a wonderful, wonderful young boy.
Oh, think nothing of it, said Sherlock. It's just wonderful to see the newt in its rightful aquarium. Jolly Dee. Must go now. Got homework to do.
Mavis Speckles retired early from the school in exchange for not being shopped to the police. Rumour has it she moved to Gambia in search of giant newts with her best friend Fatima, an ex-female sumo wrestler and fellow newt enthusiast. Each day, Harriet carried out her matronly duties with great joy.
How do you do it? You've solved these crimes so easily.
Elementary, dear Watson. Elementary. You know the answer. It's my catchphrase,
said Sherlock, as Jimbo Scattybottom did the most spectacular cartwheel right across the school ground, much to the delight of his fans.
I'm going backwards now. I'm cartwheeling all over the place. I can't stop. I'm addicted to this cartwheeling.
Sherlock Holmes, The Hounds of the Basket Weaver. One fine day, at basket weaving class, a naughty young student called Billy Crow stayed behind after class and created two scary hounds with his basket weaving skills, which were, I must say, phenomenal. Billy placed within the hounds all kinds of special effects so they could look scary in the dark. One night, the dreadful sound of howling hounds was heard within the school grounds. As the entire school looked from their windows, they saw these scary, floodlit, wiry hounds.
Whoa, this is kind of scary, ma'am,
said an American prefect called Vince Cropper.
They do indeed look rather scary, Pants,
said Watson, who shared a dormitory with both Cropper and Holmes. As the ghastly howling continued, Billy Crow was hiding behind a bush, operating some equipment he had created that made all sorts of sounds. Hounds, thunderclaps, and lightning.
Oh, dear, what are we going to do? It's a very scary thing that's happening out there,
said Mr. Pickles as he bumped into Mr. and Mrs. Hopkins in the corridor.
I think we need to have an emergency meeting in the staff room, said Mr. Hopkins.
Yes, I agree. This is absolutely terrible, you know.
Cried Greta, with a look of woe on her brow.
Yes, we must all meet in the staff room immediately,
said a very panicky Mr. Pickles. As the thunder continued to crash, and the hounds continued to howl, all the teachers met in the staff room with a policeman and a policewoman who were called Constable John Harris and Sergeant Vivian Stickmore.
We must not panic,
said Vivian Stickmore with an air of authority in her voice.
As long as the children are inside the building, we are safe from these evil hounds.
I couldn't agree more, said Constable Harris, adding, I would suggest that we shoot them, but if they turn out to be an endangered species, we would be in great trouble. And besides, us local bobbies don't like being cruel to animals.
Point taken, but then what would you suggest?
Inquired Sherlock's teacher, Mr. Hopkins.
We have all sorts of outdoor activities to consider tomorrow, including rugby, hockey, crazy golf, and Jimbo Scattybottom has agreed to do 3 hours of cartwheel lessons, which is a great confidence booster to the students, you know.
Oh, yes! Crazy golf! That must go ahead! Another good reason to solve this crime! After all, I'm a sort of co-creator of that particular sport,
said Mr. Pickles, with an element of selfishness in his tone. Suddenly, out of the blue, Sherlock Holmes burst into the school staff room.
Hello, all. I think I've solved the problem of these hounds using my magnifying glass. I can't tell you how I've solved the problem, but I can assure you I have. I will now have to walk out of the school and confront these so-called hounds.
Don't you dare go out into that dangerous environment, you naughty little schoolboy,
said Vivian Stickmore, looking very concerned indeed. A defiant Holmes walked straight out of the school, up to the hounds, with whom he made eye-to-eye contact. As the students watched from the dormitory windows in awe, they saw young Sherlock Holmes shining a torch into the hounds' eyes. Piece by piece, Sherlock Holmes dismantled the hounds, thus exposing them for being what they were, merely fakes made from wicker and straw. He also exposed Billy Crow from behind the bush, who looked very sheepish as he dropped his homemade gadgets to the floor.
Now, I've been rambled, and I must admit I've been very naughty, and I know I'm a bit of a prankster, but I won't do it again. Probably not anyway.
I don't mind what you do. It's your thing. I just like solving crimes.
Sherlock briefly crept behind an old rock, got out his magnifying glass, and consulted his ghostly granny.
Grandmama, I can't thank you enough for helping me crack this case.
That's perfectly all right, my dear. Keep up the good work,
she said, before doing her usual vanishing trick. Although Billy was punished for being a naughty boy, his prank received some admiration from his basket-weaving teacher, Doris Gleed.
I must say,
she said in the staff room,
he's been a very, very naughty boy indeed. But he does have a gift, and it must be nurtured.
I couldn't agree with you more, said Mr. Hopkins. Always good to turn a negative into a positive.
I couldn't agree more. You're such a good man. That's why I love you so much,
said Greta.
Oh, hear, hear! I think that I've got such a wonderful staff behind me, which is why Presby Prep is such a successful school!
With a familiar air of pride and triumph. Over the ensuing weeks, Doris encouraged Billy Crow to create some wonderful baskets and other creations such as dinosaurs, cats, dogs, and an absolutely fantastic woven statue of young Sherlock Holmes himself. Billy Crow went on to win a prize for his innovative work, which became national news, once again putting the school in the headlines for all the right reasons.
I think you played a great role in this recent bout of superb publicity for the school,
commented Watson as he played chess with Sherlock Holmes in the school library.
How do you do it?
He asked.
Elementary, dear Watson. Elementary,
said Sherlock Holmes with a huge grin on his face.
Oh, and by the way, checkmate.
He added as he beat Watson once more at their favourite game.
Oh, it's not fair. You always seem to beat me at chess.
Well, I certainly bashed your bishop around a bit today. It's your own lookout, you know.
I'll try harder.
Snappy Sherlock. One day, Holmes was playing a card game, which was a variation on the now famous game Snap. Naturally, Sherlock won every single game. As a direct result of this, Watson snapped.
Meh! Why do you win every single game we play? It's not fair! Meh!
To which his slightly conceited friend Sherlock replied,
Well, it's due to the strategic approach I adopt in all forms of gamemanship. Not to mention the fact that I'm Brillo Pad.
Replied Watson.
It's not as simple, Pimple Poo, as you imply. I believe you have help from some kind of special source. I'm not Dafty Pafty Poo.
Don't be such a bad sport,
snapped Holmes.
It doesn't suit you.
I'm not, snapped Watson. But on a couple of occasions, you have mentioned you get copious amounts of advice from some ghostly-wostly character from your rather impressive antiquated magnifying glass.
Aha!
Replied Holmes.
With a man of your relative intelligence, I'm astounded that you believe that. I was merely making one of my hilarious jokes. Let's face it, Watson, when it comes to gamesmanship, you are not only a bad loser, but a party pooper, and a very snappy party pooper at that.
No, I'm not,
snapped a snappy Watson.
I don't buy into esoteric mumbo-jumbo. For a start, I'm a man of science and medicinal compounds. I was merely intrigued as to why a man of your academic ability would make such a ludicrous claim. Even as a jokey-pokey-poo!
Suddenly, for no apparent reason whatsoever, the magnifying glass drifted from Sherlock's satchel and appeared in the middle of the library. In fact, it grew and it grew and it grew until it was massive. Suddenly, within the magnifying glass, Sherlock's ghostly granny appeared and addressed the ludicrous prepubescent boys.
Hello! I'm Sherlock, dear Watson, and you're both under my magical spell. Once I have disappeared, the magnifying glass will float back into my grandchild's slightly disorganized satchel. And you, Watson, through my hypnotic techniques, will forget about me altogether. It's something I learned from the other side.
I will be erased from your memory forever and a day. It's nothing personal. It's a security breach thing. Yeah.
She then addressed her arrogant grandson in an incredibly spooky voice.
Sherlock, not only will you forget this encounter, once I have done my usual disappearing trick, you will challenge your nice but nerdy friend to a game of chess. And for the very first time, Daddy boy, you will lose. This will boost the giddy little boy's confidence. There's something in it for you, don't worry. You will come up with a song that will resonate around the world for years to come.
Suddenly, there was a strange electronic sound, and Granny and the magnifying glass shrank and disappeared back into Sherlock Holmes's scruffy satchel. With Watson's memory erased of Granny Panipoo, and Sherlock unaware of what had just taken place, Holmes challenged his awkward but brilliant friend to a game of chess. Within four moves, Watson had won game, set and match. I realise that that's a tennis phrase, but I thought I'd throw it in for a laugh.
Checkmate, reasonably intelligent friend,
said Watson with a slightly smug look on his awkward, geeky face.
I'm the champion, end of story,
he cried with tears of joy streaming down his face. He then started to run around the library, whooping and cheering.
Aha! I'm the chess champion at last! I've beaten Sherlock! Yum, na, 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 na. I'm the champion!
However, his elation was short-lived when Holmes said with glee,
I let you win, dear boy, just to give you high esteem, because I'm such a lovely chap.
A deflated Watson sat back down on his chair, with his smile remixed into a frown.
Why would you do something of that nature, Sherlock? It seemed to be very patronizing. By the way, that means talking down to people.
Okay, replied Holmes. Your rather predictable question is deserving of an articulate and concise answer. You see, Watson, old bean, I've come up with a groundbreaking theory. Listen and listen well. It's not the winning, it's the taking part that counts. You were merely my guinea pig.
Oh, said Watson, I can't pretend I'm not disappointed. But at least I know I've contributed to this wonderful phrase that will help children all around the world. How do you do it?
Simple pimple poo, as you would say, or as I would say with my superior intelligence. Elementary, dear Watson. Elementary.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.